If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
And we are your hosts.
That's right. What you got here is a Star Trek podcast. Embarrassed guys. It's all the ingredients. It's what it says on the tin.
Now what we do is we're reviewing the entire series, right?
It's true. We are almost to the halfway mark.
Yeah, a lot of people want to know what we're going to do when we're done with the series.
What do you want to do, Ben? I'm proposing a Sequest DSV podcast.
You don't want to just go regular Sequest?
No.
I have said this a couple of places. I think that there are kind of three paths that I see as... Well, there's four paths. One is that we just stop. One is that we...
For the good of the nation, we just stop this.
Yeah. One is that we go to the end and then go back to the beginning and start again, which I love from a craziness standpoint, but I worry would, you know, like, this is too many layered inside jokes as it is, and that could just be a problem. And then the other two options are either we do Deep Space Nine and then Voyager, or we start to do everything in order, where it's like order of air date, Deep Space Nine episodes intermingled with TNG episodes.
Hmm. Commingling.
Yeah. Which I kind of like that idea from a, I don't know, just it appeals to me in some ways. In other ways, it doesn't, but...
Slumming it on an SD version of this show made me really think about doing the other series where HD is not a possibility.
Yeah.
Kind of bummed me out.
Oh, buddy.
Are they ever going to... I mean, is that just off the table? Are they ever going to up-res the other series?
I am surprised that they up-resed TNG. Yeah. I mean... It must have cost a fortune.
We didn't deserve that.
Go back into the archives and retransfer all of the 35mm film, re-edit everything, and then like recreate all of the special effects.
If they had known that our podcast was going to exist, I think they would have made a different choice.
Yeah. They wouldn't have wanted to show us that much detail on the nuck.
Yeah. 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 Well, I'm not ready to make a decision about that now, but it is something I'm thinking about. And fortunately, we have another almost year to come to a decision.
That's true. This is going to be season 4, episode 10, The Loss. We start with a kind of like a low-rent Dr. Crusher type in therapy.
Ben, this is some peak 90s mom hair on this person, if we've ever seen it. She,
I feel like they brought this wig to Gates McFadden and were like, and she's like, no, I like the three wigs that I have. Thank you very much. You give that mom wig to somebody else.
I feel like this woman went to the hairstylist and asked for the mom from Home Improvement cut.
Yeah.
And they gave it to her. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
I want to look like I pronounce it Volvo.
So she is one of Counselor Troy's patients, and they are in Counselor Troy's psychology room, right?
Casa de Therapy.
This therapist office looks like the area in a casino between the lobby and the buffet. Like,
oh yeah,
there's that big blue glass wall and some fake plants.
Maybe they used to have Keno in here, but not anymore.
They got that long wavy couch.
Yeah, they do have that long wavy couch. That looks like one of those things where it's really a bunch of couch segments, and you can kind of configure it in whatever wave you want it.
What do you think is the craziest couch you could get away with and still be a credible therapist? Like, could you rock Lips Couch in a therapy context and be taken seriously?
What about Giant Couch, like in the Lamb Chop universe?
Oh, man. All the great couches, Ben.
This has been Star Trek Couchcast. Hot on the heels of Star Trek Haircast.
Yeah.
This woman is in therapy because her husband bought the farm about a year ago, and she thinks she's hot shit, but she really has no defense for Troy's therapy skills. Like, she's sitting there trying to play it off like, I have no ongoing psycho-emotional struggles. And Troy's like, she kind of Maury's her, you know? She's like, well, actually, after your husband died, you thought you got rid of all his belongings, but we have a special guest. And a Uxbridge music box comes out from backstage. And the woman is, she's wrecked.
Yeah. It turns out you are the mother of this music box.
Yeah. What is it with people that have lost a spouse that this music box thing is like their only solace?
You've been therapied. Troy just walks, gets up from the couch and walks out.
Bah! Yeah, she knocks a water vase over, flips the table and leaves.
Got another one.
Mm-hmm. This is all happening, and we cut to the bridge, and Picard and Riker and Worf just doing some your basic bridge business when they start to pick shit up on the sensors, and they're like,
Sensors indicate a vast field of...
Of what, Lieutenant?
It's gone.
Oh, now they're gone. And they keep picking things up, and Picard's like, all right, let's bring the ship to a stop and figure out, like, is this a problem with our sensors? Is there really something out there? What's going on?
It feels a little bit like a Nagilum trap, because that was his move.
Yeah. And it's a weird trap, too, because, like, from this point on, they don't have any sensor glitches. Like, they're not still talking about getting, like, weird readings after this. But they cut back to Troy, like, giving her client an attagirl as she heads out from the end of her... You know, she does that thing where she, like, looks at her wristwatch and she goes, oh, well, that's actually 45 minutes, so I'll be seeing you same time next week.
She sees the light at the back of the club and she's like, oh, that's my time. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, drops the mic.
Therapy!
She kind of like, she has a little petty mall seizure almost.
Deanna, are you all right? What? You faded out there for a second. Oh, no, I'm fine. I'm just very tired, that's all.
You know how I just spent 45 minutes telling you to like face your problems and not try and brush it off? I'm not going to follow that advice myself. I'm a professional here.
I appear to have taken the hypocritic oath. Okay, headphones off. I'm going to take off.
The studio audience was there for that one.
I know.
I don't know why when I do a joke like that.
You can't predict the behavior of a studio audience, that's for sure.
Yeah, they are MIA for my shit.
You get the cricket audience, that's what you get.
Yeah. They're like, all right, well, this seems to have been a sensor glitch. Let's beat feet. Let's get out of here. We got Ubers to do. We got distress signals to respond to. Let's get out of here.
We got to pick up Picard's dry cleaning from that last mission where his, his uniform got all fucked up.
Yeah. So they tell the new helmswoman, who was actually, I think she was on helm in the last episode too, the same extra.
They give her a ton to do this episode, almost as if like she is to be a viable Wesley replacement. Like,
right.
She does not get the one throwaway security random scene where she says something about being confused and then we never see her again. Like, she has a good dozen lines of dialogue in the show.
Yeah, she's absolutely a featured player in this episode.
Yeah.
But doesn't make a big impression, I didn't think. Like, they didn't, like, while they give her a lot to say, they don't give her any character as such.
Right, right.
So they step on the gas and they're stuck in the mud once again. And they're baffled. And as they express their bafflement, we cut back to the therapy office. And Troy is tormented. She's like in Uxbridge levels of pain. And she's like,
she's almost
stumbling.
Full vineyard, right?
Yeah. She's stumbling around. She radios up the doctor. And the doctor's like, yeah, everybody's got a headache right now. Like, cool your boots.
That's what happens when a banger gets dropped. Mm-hmm. People get headaches.
She did something that I've not really noticed up to this point in the show that I just wanted to call out because I saw it twice in this episode, which is she taps her communicator badge and says, Troy to doctor, I got some business for you. And then she taps it again as though to, like, switch it off.
Hmm.
And that made me wonder, has every time somebody has tapped a communicator badge before now and not tapped it again to switch it off, they just left the line open?
Boy, that
because I feel like that's a fun way to rewatch the series. Like, what if everybody on the other end of that communication can hear what, you know, Riker is saying right now or what he's up to on the holodeck?
If someone were to keep track of all of those clicks, it turns out that, like, when people think they're clicking it on, they're actually clicking it off and they're talking to no one.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's just something I thought.
It's communicator continuity is what you're talking about here.
Right.
There's not a lot of it.
They decided to add a new mechanic to the communicator that hasn't been there before. Like, the communicator used to be smart enough to switch off, presumably.
I don't know.
I don't know, Adam. I don't know. All right, well, this has been The Greatest Generation. Tune in next week.
I almost feel like Marina Sirtis is like Sirtis.
You're going to get in trouble.
I almost feel like Marina Sirtis, like, knows she's getting an episode where she's at the top of the cast list, and she's like, I got to start making some decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Decisions with respect to continuity, especially. So I'm going to start hitting my communicator all willy-nilly.
Yeah. So what's going on here, Adam? What is afoot?
The Enterprise has wandered into some quicksand. Some space quicksand is the deal, right? Some two-dimensional space quicksand.
Yeah, they got to grab a space vine to try and get out of this predicament.
What you want to do when you get into quicksand is lie flat with your arms and legs out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to move around that much. The more you move, the deeper you go. But yeah, it's like, so there's this two-dimensional life form or series of life forms that they're caught in the flow of, and they send a probe out to look down from like a god shot on the Enterprise, and they like put a bunch of filters on the camera, and they get a look at these particles, and they're pushing them, and there's just nothing they can do to extract the Enterprise from this flow. Like, they're, you know, straining the engines against this and they're just stuck.
Yeah, every time they try to break free, it ends up coming close to destroying the ship. So
yeah,
they kill the engine and they just sort of, like a car going through a car wash, they sort of throw it into neutral and they stop fighting it and they just sort of go with the flow.
This coincides with Troy discovering that her headache is not just any headache. She has lost her ability to empath with people. She's going around complaining about, I mean, it's like losing a sixth sense, you know, like she feels genuinely disabled in this episode. And I think that it was interesting to see a character go through that in a kind of an emotionally authentic way. You know, I think that we've had some interesting stuff from Geordi on the idea of a character in a super advanced future who has who nonetheless has a disability. Troy is like, in this episode, it's all about her coping with the onset of disability. And it's like she is having a full-blown freakout, like, the entire time. And says a lot of things about, like, what it's like that I think, I don't know, rang true to me. I mean, I haven't ever gone through this before, but it seemed like, you know, it wasn't just written by people who have no idea what they're talking about, you know?
Yeah, her description of what it feels like for her isn't a good look for her, I think, because mm-hmm. how she describes it is everyone around her has been reduced into like two-dimensional movie theater standees of themselves. Like,
right.
She's like, so the deal is I can't sense any of your emotions, and that makes you nothing to me. Like, you're just like caricatures. You're just like a face.
Yeah, she's like, you know how most episodes I'm just a reasonably attractive woman who is obsessed with chocolate and that's all there is about me? That's how you are all now to me.
Oh man, yeah, she really turns the tables, doesn't she?
Yeah, and you know, that's a legitimate grievance that she's got there.
It is. I thought the timing was really unique in how this episode plays out. So she loses her powers. She goes to Six Bay and talks to Beverly. We know up to now that Beverly and her are best friends.
Yeah.
And
they even do sexy leotard workouts together.
Yeah. And it feels like Beverly is not being her friend and instead being a Pulaski-like doctor with her in terms of her hopes for getting her powers back. Troy is like, oh, I'm like, occasionally I'll get sick and my powers won't be like they should be, and they come right back, right, Doc? These are gonna come back, right? And Beverly's like, well, I think you should probably prepare for the worst. Almost,
yeah, not making any promises.
Like, bedside manner leaves a little bit to be desired at this point, especially from someone who's supposed to be your friend.
Yeah, well, and they deal a lot with this, right? Like, they talk about how doctors often make the worst patients and how, I mean, they definitely address the fact that she's kind of coming from a very, like, hypocritical angle given the kind of work she does. Like, she's not accepting anybody's offers of, like, talking to their other qualified psychologists on board. Like, there's other people that could, like, kind of help her through this journey. Like, the only person she ever like really relents and accepts some sympathy from is Riker. But
that's after initially rebuffing him.
Right.
Pretty strongly. Yeah.
And so like she's melting down. Like, she goes to the captain and lets him know like she can't do the gig anymore. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, you can do the gig just fine. Just because you don't have a superpower that makes you extra good at it doesn't mean you can't be the counselor.
She goes into the captain's office, and instead of putting a badge and a gun on the desk, she, like, puts her leotard on the desk. I can't be your potted plant anymore, Captain.
It is a guiding principle of a stop-beating base. Have you got my
Do you think it's weird that it was basically a day? A day later, she quits her job.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really weird. And the other thing that's really weird is that almost no consideration is given to the idea that it has anything to do with the environmental factors that have the ship trapped.
Yeah.
Like, nobody raises that as a possibility. And it's like, that's strange, right? Like, its onset immediately coincided with them getting stuck in this mud, and you would think that they would have at least raised the potential of it, right?
It's almost as if the doctor assumed that it happened during the fall, like during the banger. Yeah. But at no point did Deanna express that she had hit her head on a glass table or anything. Like, that wasn't part of... That was not part of the symptoms that she presented to the doctor.
Yeah. Well, this is a very inexpensive episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is...
When they don't even go so far as breaking a glass table, you know you get a cheapie. Yeah.
This is a cheap-ass bottle episode. This is a plastic bottle episode.
Ben, if you were to lose a skill of yours that had a reasonable chance of returning to you, do you think you would quit your profession like 24 hours later?
I mean, I think about it all the time.
I feel like I would give it a week. I'd give it a week, yeah. You know?
Okay. Yeah, give it a week.
And Deanna's supposed to be the hopeful one.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
Also, word gets out that she has submitted her 2 weeks' notice to the captain. And when Guinan, they don't show this, but I'm sure that when Guinan catches wind of this, she goes and puts on her extra big hat, because she is wearing by far the biggest Guinan hat we have seen yet.
Big enough for the occasion.
Yeah. So Troy is like chilling in 10-4, and there's a pretty funny scene where Guinan like walks up behind her, and Troy is totally shocked because she has no spidey sense anymore.
Didn't mean to startle you.
That's all right. I'm getting used to it.
Guinan gives her like a fresh cup of coffee and sits down and goes like, "Hey, like, I think I'm gonna take your job. I think I'm gonna go for it." And you know, like everything Guinan does, it has like an ulterior motive of getting the person she's talking to like get their thinking onto her level.
Yeah. Troy's reaction is like, you can't just be a counselor. You gotta go to counseling school. You gotta get some years under your belt. You're a fucking bartender, Guinan. What the hell?
And Guinan starts to like therapize her, and Troy's like, I see your little game. I know what you're trying to do.
Guinan's like, you've been therapy.
Yeah. And this ends basically with Troy being like pretty upset, like annoyed that, you know, like she's on her high horse, like getting out of this gig, but really annoyed at the idea that Guinan is going to be taking her place, you know.
We've said it before, Guinan would make a great counselor.
I think so. But, yeah, I mean, it's like, maybe it's like that kind of thing where you don't want, you know, if you're bidding for a gig and some other production company that you are aware of lands it, you're like, fuck, like, I know they're going to do a great job.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm never going to hear from that client now because they're always going to go to these guys.
Yeah. There's an entertainment value to Guinan's therapy that I don't think Deanna Troi can stand up to. Like, Guinan is sort of the Dr. Fraser Crane of therapists. Like she could do it in public and entertain people. She's so good at it. And I think Troy's form of therapy is much more vanilla, I guess.
Yeah, despite her obsession with chocolate.
I see what you did there.
This is around when the stakes get raised, which is that the ship is they're looking out the front of the ship, and they discover that in the path that this two-dimensional flow is taking them on is, what is it, a cosmic string segment? Is that what they call it?
Yeah.
A cosmic string?
No wider than a proton, but with gravitational fields as powerful as a black hole.
The two-dimensional beings seem to be caught in the gravitational pull of the string. Their course is taking them directly toward it.
And us right along with it.
This cosmic string is not played by Idris Elba, though, unfortunately.
It's just as deadly, though.
Yeah.
We got an elastic product. You know what that means? That means when people can go elsewhere and get their printing and copying done, they're going to do it. You acting like we got an inelastic product and we don't.
They start to get, like, panicky, where they're like, shoot some torpedoes at it.
Which, it feels like a totally natural reaction to me. Like,
yeah.
A lot of times their actions during an emergency seem too sensible to read as realistic. Like, they're very patient most of the time when disaster is looming. And at this point, what they're doing by shooting torpedoes at it feels like something I would do. Like, shoot it and let's get out of here. Unfortunately, it doesn't work.
Yeah. So that doesn't work. And we cut back to Troy, and she's like trying to pack up her office. And this is when we learn that Troy has like 700 iPads.
Is this really the right bag to be packing 12 iPads in?
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be a tight fit, and I think that there's even a part where she attempts to close it and it doesn't get all the way closed.
Somewhere
I'm thinking of something else.
Between now and the 24th century, something big happened in the world of luggage, where they just stopped caring about form or function or comfort.
Tumi went out of business.
Yeah.
JanSport went out of business.
You got the roundy that we've seen a bunch of times, the roundy plastic duffel, and then you've got this Halliburton metal suitcase that Troy's carting around.
So she gets called into the ready room, and Picard's like, I know that you're trying to quit, but I need you and Data to work out a plan here. And she's like, fine, fuck. she's trying to leave in peace. And so she agrees to this, and she goes into the observation lounge and starts talking to Data, and she gets kind of struck with inspiration in talking to him. And she's like, these are life forms. This two-dimensional flow that we're caught in is a life form. And we've been worried that, they're going to get dragged into this cosmic string with us. But maybe they're not moving toward it because they're caught in its gravity. Maybe they're like a moth to the flame. And we can, what if we could like make a better flame for them to go be attracted to? So this is a pretty funny scene because she gets like on a roll and she's like, sorry, do you want me to shut up? And Data's like, no, like this is great.
Normally you don't say anything at all.
Yeah.
Please continue.
What if they've chosen a course to the cosmic string? A case of pure stimulus response, driven by instinct, just like the moth to a flame.
You should do this more often. You're not bad at it.
Like, and, if Data had to hack Troy's password, like, he doesn't have enough vocal information to do an impression of her voice. She's spoken so little throughout the series.
Yeah. So the plan is they're going to use the deflector dish to make make an echo of the cosmic string.
They turn the deflector dish into the speaker from the beginning of Back to the Future, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's a fun idea, right?
Right. And, And they have Marty McFly down in deflector control. Drop a G on that electric guitar. And it works. Like, there's enough turbulence in the two-dimensional beings that they're able to break free, and like just the second they break free, Troy is like you know, all of her senses come flooding back to her, and she's like, oh, this is great. It wasn't actually their certain doom that they were heading to at all. That's where they wanted to be.
The cosmic string was never dangerous to them. It was the one place in the galaxy they most wanted to be.
The end.
Well, it's not quite the end.
Not the end.
I am the cutest of all. Lock faces on that vessel. I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
There's like a hang where she and Riker and Guinan are kicking it on the at 10 forward. Oh, and I think Beverly is probably there.
Yeah. Yeah, she is, because there's sort of a, you guys, I was a real jerk to all of you. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And then I think Riker is looking to get some booty out of this situation. she was like, no, you were pretty hard on me there at the beginning.
Yeah, Riker goes in for a kiss.
Yeah.
Which seems fairly strange, given their relationship.
Right. Well, I mean, like, I think he was, like, maybe more instrumental than Guinan in kind of getting her to stop the feeling bad for herself festival.
Yeah.
And the way he did it was being, like he's her closest friend on the ship, and he was, like, he was not sugarcoating the situation for her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he doesn't get any kissies at the end, but I think it...
Get sugar, give sugar.
Yeah, but I think it was the kind of, like, tough love that she needed in that moment, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like Troy's crankiness about her circumstance is a purely female trait on this show? I was thinking about that as I was watching it. Like, if a similar... Well, this also coincides with another point that I want to make, which is, like, this season seems definitely about loss to me. Like, Picard with the Borg, Worf's loss of honor... and the death of his girlfriend, like Ishara Yar betraying Data's friendship, Wes leaving, like these are examples of loss. And now Troy gets an at-bat in the Loss League, and her reaction to it is so different from anyone else's. Like she falls apart completely in a way that the male characters who have had to deal with it haven't really. I mean, I guess save for Picard in the vineyard, but Troy plays it out professionally and in front of everyone in public in a way that Picard doesn't. Like, it's one thing to fall apart in front of family. Like, that's pretty much the safest place you can do it. But in a professional context, like, Troy is the one who cries at her desk.
Right. This is, somebody sent us like a Medium article on Twitter about the Remember Me episode where everybody's disappearing, and how it was like a very interesting perspective on the episode, basically saying, like, despite the fact that everything that the doctor is saying sounds crazy, like, everybody believes her, like, instinctively, and that's actually a pretty radical thing from a, like, women in the workplace perspective. Like, women's complaints often get kind of disregarded or downgraded.
Yeah.
So they're saying, like, you know, Dr. Crusher essentially has Picard's complete trust that what she's experiencing is real right up to the end of that episode, which is something we didn't notice, but somebody did and wrote this big article about it. I don't know where I was going with that,
I think we did discuss a little bit, but just in the context of Beverly's relationship with Picard and less about its depiction of gender credibility. Like, we didn't go quite that far into it.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was just, like, I mean, everybody keeps going, like, maybe you should get into some therapy. Like, I know it's, like, not your first instinct, but maybe that's the right thing. And she is so resistant to it. And I think that we've seen a bunch of that, like the Lieutenant Barclay episode, like he's really freaked out about going to therapy too, which is weird because why would, like, one of the most highly ranked officers on the ship be a therapist if everybody in the future is terrified of talking about their fifis? Like, it's a strange, I mean, like, they seem more resistant to it than the average person in my life. But then again, I live in New York, so where everybody's in therapy.
I mean, is the through line that they're not, that they're telegraphing, but they're not talking about, is that they're all Scientologists?
Yeah. They never show them with the cans, but
the can,
but you can assume they're there.
The cans are just out of frame. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I did. I think it's not a great episode, but I have some misgivings about the story arc for Troy, but I thought Marina Sirtis's performance was really good, and she really like brought a lot to it, and you know, they gave her a lot to do, and she more than stepped up to the plate, and I feel like it's been a long time coming.
It's asking a lot to get an actor to just fall apart the way she does in one scene in particular, where she is with Frakes, and there's a certain amount of, I think, vanity you have, and you're asked to just like to ugly cry the way that she does. And I admired her performance for that reason. You know, like up until now, she's been the bridge officer in the bodysuit.
Yeah.
And now I think she's more of a developed character than she's ever been.
Totally. Welcome to the show, Counselor Troy.
4 seasons, 10 episodes in. I feel like we know who you are now.
Yeah.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use. The products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bonch trimming technology with 2 interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. Right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of TripleClick.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben. You want to check to see if we have any Priority One messages?
I think that's a good idea.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a first of a couple of Priority One messages here. And this one is a personal message. It is from Richard Dodson to Ben Connor. And here's how it reads. It says, "Today is your B-Day, and this message is my gift. You aren't going to see this on your B-Day, so tonight at your party, you'll think, I'm a dick for not having gotten you anything. Then you'll see this, and you're going to feel bad. I hope the excitement of seeing your name on a pod while riding your bike to work doesn't cause you to run into a car." Wow, very macabre. Wait a second. Oh, I guess because they're viewers, right? That's why he wrote it all as C.
Yeah.
I'm not quite as smart as Richard.
Richard gets our references better than we do.
Yeah.
I like this form of friendship. I feel like this is very similar to how I treat my friends, with a bunch of teasing.
Yeah.
And a bunch of manipulation about expectations.
Yeah, fun. Well, happy birthday, Ben. That sounds like you got good people in your life.
Richard says that he thinks Ben's gonna think he's a dick, but he is most definitely a Richard. That was terrible, and I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, the studio audience liked it.
Oh, yeah. They're behind me, 100%.
We have another one, Adam. Do we not?
We do.
So we have a message here for my Peruvian princess from her incredibly attractive husband.
There are no character limits on from and for, I've noticed.
So here's the message. To the naked Peruvian princess doing her hair and pretending to ignore this nerdy podcast. Yes, Jesse, this is for you. Happy 40th birthday. I hope to experience many more with you. P.S. Papa is giving you butt sex tonight, so prepare accordingly.
Who is that gift for, really?
I don't know. It really sounds much more like it's from an incredibly attractive husband.
Yeah. Oh, Jesse, I'm sorry.
Well, to me, this sounds like a lady who is excited about getting butt sex from Papa.
Yeah.
Either that or a woman who is trapped in a marriage with a man who does not understand her at all.
Yeah, Mr. Attractive Husband, make sure you have consent for that butt sex later.
Yeah, I want Riker levels of butt sex consent before any of this goes down. But assuming that is all in place, happy birthday, Jesse.
A little bit behind the curtain of this one. This was our first Priority One message where we were asked, are you comfortable reading this one? And emphatically, we both were like, yes, obviously.
Good times. If you would like to leave a Priority One message and test our limits, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal and $200 for a commercial message. Sorry to the birthday boy and the birthday girl for just revealing the price tag of your gift.
Oh, is that all it costs? I was made to believe that sort of activity was far more expensive.
Well, it amortizes, Adam. Once you've used the butt plug a few times, the price really starts to go down.
Mm. Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I'd be curious to hear yours first, Adam. I haven't done that to you in a while, but...
Yeah. Shimoda table turn. That's what that is. Drunk Shimoda is the character, actor, or moment in the episode that we find as being the most incongruent or strange or amusing to us. We call these moments out as a way of honoring our favorite bit part in the series, Jim Shimoda from episode 2.
Yeah.
I think I really struggled to come up with one for this episode, and it was a toss-up to me between 90s Mom and and Wes's replacement, because to me, they gave Wes's replacement so much to do, and I kept feeling like it was going somewhere. Like, okay, like, eventually we are going to get something out of her character that we'll be able to latch onto. We never get that. I have expected her to be killed somehow too, because they also do that as an effective way to set something up.
Yeah.
That never happened. And so it just felt like an empty character. And I'm wondering if she's going to be in episodes coming up. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
So I guess my Shimoda is the wasted opportunity of maybe developing something here with the new helmsman. Like,
right.
Why not?
Yeah. I mean, presumably you have space in the budget to have there be a character, right?
Yeah. And again, like, Colm Meaney is in the corner, like, drumming his fingers on the transporter pad. Like, Jesus Christ, guys. Like, I haven't been in the last 8 episodes. Like, and you're giving this new person, like, 20 lines of dialogue? Come on.
Good point.
You, so far, all you've given me in season 4 is some weird kayaking backstory. Is this a prank?
Yeah, you managed to write a scene where I had to get into a wetsuit and then take part of it off.
Do you know how difficult it is to get into a wet wetsuit?
I think I'm going to give my drunk Shimoda to the deceased husband of 90s Mom. Why that weird music box? Why is that his last personal effect left on the ship?
Were those his ashes? Do we ever see what was in the box?
No, but it made music when she opened it, so I'm assuming that there's a mechanism in there of some kind.
You'd imagine the Uxbridge PTSD for Troy has got to be pretty heavy at that moment. Like, even having a music box around is going to be terrifying.
For like a year, she said. Like, like she like specially took this and kept it in her office for a year. That's got to be like a telltale heart. Like, every time she's in her office alone, she just knows that there's a music box in that cupboard waiting to be turned on and poison her mind.
I think it's pretty strange that she took it upon herself to basically steal someone's personal possession and store it for a year.
Yeah.
We don't have a problem with that?
I don't know. The lady seemed really appreciative, though.
If this were a contemporary doctor and you were in therapy and suddenly your doctor produced from behind the lips couch one of the possessions that you thought that you threw away, like some bagged garbage that you thought you'd gotten rid of, I think that was pretty fucked up.
I have some bank receipts and here's a credit card that came in the mail that you didn't open.
I've noticed that you haven't sorted your recycling as well as you should be. I've taken the liberty of doing that for you.
You should get a shredder or take that stuff into the office and shred it there.
Yeah, odd behavior. Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode? Does it get any better than this?
It sure does. This episode coming up is season 4, episode 11, Data's Day. A friend's impending wedding compounds Data's confusion about the nuances of human feelings. I love that as a description because it just really brings into sharp relief how different this show is from all other shows. Like, that's the line that you're putting in, like, the TV guide, hoping that people will tune in on the basis of being compelled by it.
I don't think that there's anything stronger than a friend's wedding to confuse anyone about the nuances of human feelings, right?
Okay, fair enough. Do you remember this one?
I don't, not at all.
I kind of do. I think it's like one of the few that's like a letter that he's writing to. It's an epistemological episode where he's writing.
That's the part of the flower, right? That's the epistemal.
Yeah,
that's the thing that the bee pollinates.
Yeah, it's that part that the bee fucks. He's writing a letter to Commander Maddox, actually, and he's trying to give Maddox some insight into what it's like to be Data.
Maddox is like, that is not how pollinization works. I need to disabuse you of this right now.
Well, we don't have any vetoes, so we're going to be watching it.
Got to soldier on through.
Mm-hmm.
If you approve of the way that we describe science, one way to show us is by going to MaximumFun.org/donate, where you can mm-hmm. be one of the many to help support the production of this show.
Yes. You can also go there to get more information about our tour. I wanted to say one thing about the Oakland stop, which is that we are going to be doing, it's not going to be a podcast as such, but it will be us in conversation with Cyrus Farivar, the journalist from Ars Technica, who I think in a lot of ways kind of broke our show. Like, he wrote the first article about it that kind of put us on a lot of people's radar. And
if you're going to blame one person for this show's existence,
yeah,
more than me and Ben, it's definitely Cyrus.
Yeah. Cyrus is a really fascinating guy, really really smart dude, and we're going to be doing this thing where we'll do kind of like a Greatest Gen in conversation with Ars Technica, and then we'll do like a Q&A, and it's a free event, technically speaking, but we would suggest a $15 donation, and we're doing it to raise funds for the National Center for Science Education. Which is a great nonprofit that works really hard to make sure that science education is of high quality and not full of bullshit like bees fucking epistems. So I think it's a great cause, and it should be a really fun event. It's at this place called Eli's Mile High Club in Oakland. I highly recommend you check out Eli's website. It's a lot of fun. I think they intentionally designed it to look like it came from 1996.
Cool.
And it'll just be kind of like, probably an hour of programming and then just a hang and a meetup afterwards. And it supports science education. Who wouldn't want to be behind that? So come to the San Francisco show and then come to the Oakland show the next night.
Yeah, it'll be great. We'll be in town a couple of days.
Yeah. You should also buy our merch. Go to maxfunstore.com and leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you download your podcasts. Every review helps raise our visibility, and that's how we grow the show and helps us make this thing a success. So
yeah, you know what else? That. You know what else helps is talking about us on Reddit.
Yeah. We're close to 1,000 people signed up for our subreddit.
Yeah.
Greatest Gen subreddit.
That's right. People started posting on r/Star Trek too, which is
much
big.
Much appreciated.
I think there are a ton of readers over there that would like to know more about us.
Yeah. There's like 100,000 people on that subreddit. If a tenth of them came over to our show, that would be a big deal for us.
Yeah.
So go do that. We've got a Facebook group that's also super active. The Facebook group and the Reddit are always kind of like neck and neck for how many people have joined each one, and they're both really fun places to hang out. We should thank Dark Materia for our music and Adam Ragusea for our other music. Adam Ragusea made like a new piece of music that I'm obsessed with, by the way. So thanks to him for that. And you should check out his podcast, The Pub, on Current Public Media. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an epistemological episode of The Greatest Generation.
Man, that was a world champion callback when you were talking about science education. That was, that's what you get when you listen to this show.
I got to look up epistemology and make sure I'm using it right.
That would be the best part, is if it were...
Oh, fuck, I'm totally not. Wait, is it epistological? Fuck.
Oh, man, we're going to get letters, Ben. Which is fine. Just tell people to send their letters to Jesse Thorne.
All right. Fuck, what was I thinking of?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.